Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Painting the Stream. I am Dan Reichert, and sitting across the table from me is my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you, honey?
I'm great. How are you, Daniel?
I'm doing really great. I think I'm very excited about what we will get to talk about on this episode here.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you are as well.
I am.
I think this is a sleeper. This is something I brought up to you maybe a week ago, like, hey, have you ever seen The Cable Guy, the Jim Carrey movie? And you said...
No.
No?
I had not. And I was definitely one of those. I was like prime age to be obsessed with Jim Carrey movies, like in the early mid 90s, because I was a kid.
So you're born in 91.
I was born in 91, yeah. And I remember like obsessively watching The Mask.
Yes.
And you know, watching Ace Ventura, and obviously watching again as an adult, I clearly didn't appreciate a lot of those jokes. But you know, being super into Jim Carrey, like a lot of kids were. And I remember going to West Coast Video to rent a movie, as we did on a fairly weekly basis at my family, with my family. And there was all the Jim Carrey movies grouped together, and I remember Cable Guy was there. And I asked my dad about it, and he said something like, oh, you don't want to watch that. It's not like the other movies. So because of that, I always had this perception that Cable Guy was not a good movie. Like, I always heard it was a black comedy. So In my mind, I thought it was like – a shitty comedy that also wasn't effectively scary.
So you thought it was going to be like an Ace Ventura 2, just like bad slapstick, but also was like worse than the usual. Like,
yeah, it was just like jump scares or something. That was my idea of it.
Oh, like horror type stuff.
And I had no idea about the stalker stuff. I didn't know any of that going on. That, like, literally what I described to you was the extent of my knowledge of the movie.
And did that stay true until we watched it? Like, you had not learned through osmosis more about the movie?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That's so cool.
I didn't know that it like kind of has this cult following now or anything like that. I went in blind, aside from, you know, feeling like it's probably not going to be that great of a movie. But yeah. I was wrong.
Well, what you describe about your father being like, you don't want to watch that one, that one's weird, like, that is very much what the consensus was about the movie. Because I also think I was of a really good age to really love Ace Ventura, because 94 was like the year of Jim Carrey. You know, that was Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber all came out in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three giant blockbusters. But I remember even before that, I was born in 84, and he was on In Living Color. And I always loved sketch comedy, SNL, you know, In Living Color, all that stuff. And Fire Marshal Bill, all that stuff. I was just like entranced by Jim Carrey. I was always like, this guy is this like weird rubber cartoon man. Like, he is everything he did, even in like bad sketches. I was just like transfixed by him.
Yeah.
And then when I heard Ace Ventura was coming out, I was like, holy shit, he's going to be in a big movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. And sorry if I'm going into a whole personal history of Jim Carrey stuff here, but it was a big part of my youth. I remember seeing it with my mom, and I would have been 10 years old. And there is the scene where he returns the lost, is it the dog or a bird or something, to this woman. And she's like, how can I repay you? And he says, she's like, oh, can you take your pants off? And he grabs like this thing above him, and she's clearly...
Oh, I remember the scene well.
Yeah, and he's just like wildly rocking and stuff. And I remember turning to my mom afterwards and being like, what was going on there? And she was just like doing that parent thing. Of like, oh, I don't know, she was just helping him tie his shoes or something. Okay, I learned later on. But The Mask was incredible. I remember being at the swimming pool that summer, and all anyone that was 10 years old talked about was Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And I remember being there with my friend, and he was like, oh, I know what his next movie's going to be. And this is before anyone had the internet or anything. I was like, oh, he's got a new movie coming out. What is it? And he's like, yeah, it's called Dumb and Dumber. And for some reason, I thought his name was Dumbin. Like Dummon or something, which is not a name. So I thought that was the character's name was Dumb and Dumber.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that sounds weird, but whatever. Hopefully it's good. And saw that. Loved it, obviously.
Yeah.
And so those three, I think, were very much like in that Carrey wheelhouse.
Ace Ventura, like, Dumb and Dumber, and Mask.
Yes, those three in 1994. And he was just the biggest fucking thing. I remember talking to Short Grandma, you know, Short Grandma.
Yes.
Because I was obsessed with Carrey back then. And she was like, why do you like him? All he ever does is... And this doesn't play because it's not an audio or it's not a video podcast. But she just started like mushing her face together with her hands. Like, all he does is blah, blah, blah. And like pushed her face in a lot. It's like, no, he's very funny. He's incredibly gifted physical comedian. I'm sure I said it that eloquently when I was 10. But
so those three movies that triad. I feel like that represents peak Carrey, or at least the Jim Carrey that most people think of before they think of like Eternal Sunshine and his more serious stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like amidst those two periods of his filmography, the Cable Guy was kind of overlooked because it was this kind of offshoot, weird deviation from his usual formula, even though it was kind of immediately like pushed up against those movies. I mean, it came out in 96. It wasn't like there was a tremendous amount of time that had passed between the movies or anything.
Yeah, all that really happened in between was one, which is very much in line with the 94 Carrey stuff, which was Ace Ventura 2, mm-hmm. When Nature Calls, which as an 11-year-old was hilarious, but you and I and I think some friends watched when we lived in San Francisco. That one doesn't quite hold up outside of the rhino scene, which is still hilarious, and I will stand by that. But then Batman Forever was the big, like, that was kind of the first non, hey, I'm just the leading man slapstick guy. Like, he did actually a really good portrayal mm-hmm. of the Riddler, but it's kind of a weird Joel Schumacher Batman movie. Like, it's not the traditional Carrey, but then 96 is right. Cable Guy.
Yeah, so I feel like I agree with you, what you said about Ace Ventura. It doesn't really hold up. And I would be very surprised if The Mask held up at all.
We have it on Blu-ray, and we've always teased the idea, like, should we just watch The Mask tonight? There was that night that we watched Austin Powers and Goldmember. I wish we would have just watched The Mask.
Ugh, that movie.
Goldmember was not great terrible. To go back to.
But this movie held up so well. In fact, I would say it probably has gotten better with age. I mean, yes. Even though I don't have, you know, that point of reference, just judging by what I've seen about, you know, contemporary critics saying it was bad and you know, the reception being kind of poor. I think it's definitely, if it came out today, it would be a lot more well received.
Yeah, I think about like what we've actually watched just in the, you know, 4 years we've been together. And we've actually, weirdly, not by design, watched a lot of Jim Carrey. We've mm-hmm. watched both Ace Venturas. We watched Dumb and Dumber. We watched...
Dumb and Dumber held up pretty well. I mean, there was a few jokes that really got me, like when they were crying over the commercial, life insurance commercial.
Wiping the money on their face and everything. Like, yeah, there's just genuinely super clever stuff.
And then there's just like weird moments where like kind of rape is insinuated, like really creepy
Which
moments.
Which part is
they
that?
They were in some bathtub, remember? It was like super dark.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I remember that because when we were watching it, I was like, what the fuck? I don't remember the scene at all. And then I looked it up and I don't think that was in the theatrical thing or the VHS release. So I think I had never seen that before and I was super confused when we saw that.
Yeah.
I forgot what was even happening there.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But that did hold up pretty well. I remember we enjoyed that. We watched The Truman Show together, which still really good and like yep. way ahead of its time in terms of just like the 24/7 celebrity, mm-hmm. you know, it's great. I really like that. Outside of that, I think that's about what we've watched of Jim Carrey here. Even after watching all of that Jim Carrey stuff in the last few years, mm-hmm. I really think this might have aged the best out of all of them.
So I've never seen The Cable Guy prior to us watching it for the movie and for the podcast. And I went into it with kind of like lukewarm expectations based on the reception I was aware of from, you know, contemporary critics. And I got to say it's a really good movie.
So was there a point early on where you realized that like, oh, this is better than I expected it would be, or this is different than I thought it would be?
Well, I kind of like when the movie started and it was just like the Cable Guy visiting Matthew Broderick's house or apartment or whatever, like I thought it was just going to be more of like a weird, quirky, like the typical quirky Jim Carrey, you know, maybe like a buddy comedy. And there were indications that he was kind of creepy and obsessive, but then there would be moments like towards the middle of the movie where I'd be like, okay, maybe this is just a quirky buddy comedy. But then it would go super darky and I'd be like, oh no, this is far worse.
That's the thing is like throughout the movie, he is doing the regular like Jim Carrey mugging mm-hmm. and all that stuff and the super physical comedy that you would expect. Mm-hmm. But then there are the times where it just gets like weirdly dark in a way that like if you I read the Wikipedia plot summary before we came in here, mm-hmm. and if you just read it, you know, divorced from all of the Jim Carrey theatrics, it just kind of reads like some weird, like if you told me this was like some Alfred Hitchcock movie about a mm-hmm. stalker, I'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah, it sounds like a creepy movie or something.
Yeah, this would have been a completely different movie if Jim Carrey wasn't playing the Cable Guy.
Yes, which I think you read something that I had not heard before about who was originally cast.
Oh yeah, Chris Farley was supposed to, but the scheduling conflicts or whatever. And I was thinking if it was Chris Farley in the role of the Cable Guy, it would have been a lot less like it would have been far creepier, I think. just because he has such darker sensibilities about him more than Jim Carrey, where Jim Carrey is
Farley?
Just like, yeah, I feel like
he, Farley had his demons for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like too, he is so over the top with his physical comedy that it would have been difficult to suspend my disbelief and try to watch it as like, okay, here he is in this particular context in like a family gathering or a basketball court or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
As incredible as Farley is, you know, one of the all-time SNL greats, obviously one of the great physical comedy guys, like everyone sees him as just like this incredible genius of comedy. He didn't really do nuance. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just loud as hell all the time, mm-hmm. just larger than life. Whereas Carrey is, again, this weird rubber cartoon man through most of this movie, mm-hmm. even. But he has these moments of subtlety and like malice and jealousy. And like he kind of plays these slight little things and facial expressions so, so well that it works for this character. And it really isn't him just like making silly faces for an hour and a half.
Yeah. And there are moments, especially when he's interacting with like other characters that aren't Matthew Broderick or Steven or whatever his name is, where you can see how like people might be charmed by his character.
Yeah.
You know, he's quick and he's fun and he's always, you know, telling jokes and being weird. And you would probably just consider him like, oh, he's eclectic and definitely a little weird, but he's harmless, you know? But then it like just veers off into this like much darker space where it's just obsessive. And, you know, there are moments in the movie, particularly this one part where he's talking to what's her name? What's the name of the actress?
Leslie Mann.
Yeah, Leslie Mann.
Yeah, Judd Apatow's wife. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking to her, trying to essentially convince her to get back with Steven.
Yeah.
But he kind of breaks out into like tears at one point, talking about how like he had separated from former lover, and then by the time he was ready to get back with her, she had died.
Right, and when she went bungee jumping in Mexico and there's no regulations there. And,
yeah. And that was like a silly punctuation on that anecdote, but like while he was telling it, I half wondered if like, is this supposed to be like canon in his history,
right?
And like he was actually showing real emotion, like stripped from the guise of all the physical comedy and everything. And then that made it seem so much darker. And like from that point forward in the movie, and this was probably like halfway through the movie, mm-hmm. I would say it just got so much more darker and terrifying to me, because I just felt like he was hiding so much stuff underneath like the facade that he was constantly portraying.
Yeah. And you know, we're gonna jump around this a lot because, you know, hey, this movie's been out for a while, mm-hmm. if you haven't seen it, it's on Hulu, go watch it before mm-hmm. you finish this up. But you learn by the end that like none of it is real. He's this full-on like sociopath. Like he only lives through TV references, mm-hmm. and things like that. Like you never really know who this guy is. You get that brief flashback of him, you know, sitting 2 inches from the TV as a kid, mm-hmm. raised by television. That's all he talks about and everything. But that's all he knows. And so I don't think we get a glimpse into who this guy is or what his past is outside of that one flashback.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. And then so reoccurring throughout the movie, like similar to the theme of being obsessed with TV and growing up with TV and it kind of replacing your identity. There's this the Sam Sweet trial.
Oh my God.
So this is like mentioned throughout the movie. It's not like a focus of the movie, but it's just kind of something that's constantly happening in the background. And I guess it's supposed to like reference or kind of emulate like the Menendez brothers trial, and like how this was this before OJ or this was after OJ?
This would have been after. I think OJ was like the summer of 94 is when that started. So I think the idea of at the end, the entire country is watching the verdict. I think that's kind of an OJ thing, but like the brothers thing is like a Menendez thing. Yeah.
But it just kind of speaks to how like everyone is just so transfixed by TV, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess he is like patient zero for that, the cable guy, because, I mean, he refers to the TV as his babysitter, you know? His mom just leaves him with the TV all the time. Like, that's all he has. So when he finally experiences some semblance of human connection, he just fucking rams it into the ground.
Yeah, and they make references and stuff that are, I was surprised to see that, like, man, this game, I talk about games a lot on podcasts, this movie came out in 1996 when, like, people were kind of just starting to talk about the internet, and it's dealing with these thoughts of like this all-encompassing like computer and TV and pop culture stuff. Like they talk about the information superhighway several times in this, which people just started talking about around like 95, mm-hmm. 96. Mm-hmm. And part of the thing that I loved about this movie is that it is a really cool time capsule of 96, because you were very, very young. Mm-hmm. You were, you know, 5 years old. I was 12. And a lot of this stuff just brings me right back to that time period. They bring up Mortal Kombat a couple times. Jerry Springer is there. There even ideas like when Matthew Broderick is talking to Leslie Mann and he's like, oh, yeah, did you know that Sleepless in Seattle is on cable tonight? The idea of like, oh, this movie is on tonight.
Planning we should your go, day around yeah, it starts show at, on TV.
Yeah, it's on at 8 o'clock. Let's get the popcorn popped and sit down. And it's like that very rarely happens nowadays. But like Ren and Stimpy, there's a GoldenEye reference, which I was really into. There's Waterworld stuff. Like it is a really cool time capsule that feels so fresh now. Like this movie, I kind of put it in the same class as like a Last Action Hero, where like that one or like this one, when Last Action Hero came out, it was during like prime Schwarzenegger, and everyone's like, what is this weird thing? It's this winking self-referential thing. Schwarzenegger's kind of playing himself. Like no one really got it when it came out. And now, you know, you and I watched Last Action Hero a couple years ago, and I think it's much better now than it was when it came out. But I think Cable Guy is an even more extreme example of like, man, this aged really, really well.
Yeah, because it doesn't like beat you over the head with like contemporary technology or what was futuristic in 1996, even though it's called The Cable Guy and cable is obviously a big part of the movie. But the predictions it has for the future end up being pretty accurate. I mean, he talks about like when you see Mortal Kombat, like playing Mortal Kombat with your friend in Vietnam, like switching from the Louvre on one channel, the female wrestling on the other one, and just, you know, having all this information at your fingertips.
Yeah.
The future is now, he says, and he was right. It is now. It's 2019.
I remember there's those parts where he's standing on the satellite talking about playing Mortal Kombat against your friend, and it's like, we're, as of this week that this podcast is going up, we'll be playing Mortal Kombat against people possibly in Vietnam. So, man, there was so much about this that I really, really enjoyed. Like, one thing was, I try to think back because there is a lot of there are a lot of familiar faces that pop up throughout this movie, and I had to do a lot of thinking of like, were these people famous when this happened, or was this kind of like still this kind of like underground kind of cult comedy scene? And it's a weird mix because Ben Stiller directed this, so we talked about that that trial that's going on, and Ben Stiller plays the two brothers that one of them killed each other, Sam Sweething, and it's a weird mix of like the Ben Stiller Show from MTV and like Mr. Show, which I'm not an expert on Mr. Show, but I feel like it was either like in production or about to be in production when in the mid-90s.
Well, the fact that Bob Odenkirk and David Cross were in it makes me think like maybe they were. I mean, if they were already a comedic unit, that they would appear in the same movie together.
Yeah, or like I don't know if they were in some like improv group together or something, but I think Mr. Show was probably going on. And the Ben Stiller Show, I've only seen a few sketches. I think I was a bit too young to really know what that was when it was happening. But that was kind of like early 90s MTV stuff. And I know like a lot of people sprang from that show. But it still, I think, was more of an underground kind of cult comedy type thing. Like, you know, The State or whatever later on. You know, it wasn't SNL. It wasn't like a huge thing. So we see people like Andy Dick shows up. He's the leader of the guy at
Medieval Times.
Yeah, leader of Medieval Times. Kathy Griffin is actually the mother of Jim Carrey's character as a child in a flashback. We've got Janine Garofalo as a waitress at Medieval Times, which I think she had maybe done like one season of SNL at this point. You've got Jack Black playing a fairly major role as Matthew Broderick's friend. You know, Leslie Mann, which I wondered, because Judd Apatow was in the credits as a producer, I wonder if this is where he met Leslie Mann. And she wound up showing
and
up.
And it wasn't where he met Leslie Mann.
Is it? That is?
Yeah, like she read for the part of the role she ended up playing, and he read Carrie's part during their audition. And when she left the room, he said to the person sitting next to him that he was going to that she was his future wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And she wound up being like a big part of like several of his movies once he became this comedy director.
But
and
actually, Judd Apatow is credited as a producer on the movie, but he was actually one of the main writers on it.
Really? Okay, because I remember I went to the IMDb and I checked the writer, and there's only like one name credited, and it was the only movie he was credited with was The Cable Guy. Now, is he the one that you told me off mic that this guy had the idea of the movie because he saw a cable guy in someone's apartment, like, too late at night?
Yeah, he was like, a prosecutor in L.A., and he, like, went to visit his mom, and he saw a cable guy in the apartment building really late at night, and he was wondering, like, why what would bring someone like him in the building at this hour, you know? And then the whole thing just sprang from that. But the original screenplay was actually a much more lighthearted film. It really didn't have any of these dark elements. It was more like a What About Bob kind of movie. But once, you know, it got into other hands and it went through drafts and stuff, and Judd Apatow got his hands on Ben Stiller and everything, just got darker and darker with every draft. And yeah, it's just, and what I really love about it is that it's obviously very lighthearted and like genuinely hilarious at times and truly terrifying at other times. But like the way Carrie plays it, it's like there's this gray area where like through most of the movie, especially the beginning part, I didn't know if we were supposed to like Carrie, if we were supposed to root for him.
Feel bad for him?
Yeah. And I guess we are supposed to feel bad and sympathetic for him. At the end, I mean, like he was kind of a victim of circumstance and it really, he was obviously mentally ill. But it was like, sometimes I was rooting for him. Other times I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And like just... the gray area is such a nuanced thing that you like never see in movies from that era, you know?
Yeah,
it was always like if he was an evil guy, he'd be really evil, like either like super convincingly good from the get-go and then a swerve and then he's a super evil guy.
Yeah.
It would rarely be this like weird like gray area that would go between evil and like hilarious and funny to be around. And
yeah, I remember, you know? That blew my mind when I saw this, because I was very used to, you know, being raised on like the Arnold and Stallone school of action films. Mm-hmm. That this movie, actually, I think it came out within a week or maybe the same week as The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw that on my 12th birthday, which would have been June 16th, and this came out on June 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Ed Harris's character, Francis X. Hummel, Brigadier General, it being so crazy that like you kind of feel for him when he dies at the end, because he like did this super fucked up thing and everything, but he kind of had these gray, you know, it wasn't black and white.
Right.
He wasn't the sniveling, you know, mustache twirling villain or something. And they do a similar thing with Carrie here. Even at the end, after all he's put Matthew Broderick and Leslie Mann through, they're wheeling him off to the ambulance after he's fallen onto the satellite dish.
Mm-hmm.
And Matthew Broderick is still kind of like, hey, you gonna be all right? What's your name? I'm like, all right, buddy. Like, it's even after all this, it's incredibly well done.
And then there are moments like that bathroom beating scene. That
yes,
was crazy.
Which, speaking of people that were not famous at the time, Owen Wilson mm-hmm. playing a great asshole boyfriend.
Yeah, he plays it really well. Even though it's a small part, he does a really great job of just being this asshole, like, first date guy.
He only has a few lines, and like most of them are like getting mad at waiters about chicken, which I thought he did a really good job with. Yeah, he was fantastic in this, which you see so many of these people kind of pop up more in like the later, like Wes Anderson. Like, look at like Tenenbaums, like Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson,
right.
A lot of these faces and everything.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
But yeah, there are these really dark scenes where it's like Carrie dresses up in this weird, like Freddie Mercury disguise mm-hmm. and, you know, follows him because he knows he's on a date with, Rachel. Was that the character's name?
I think
Leslie
so.
Mann's.
Yeah.
And just follows him to the bathroom, pays off the bathroom attendant and just like beats the shit out of Owen Wilson.
Yeah. And he's being really silly during the beatdown. So it's easy to just kind of laugh at Jim Carrey's antics. But like when you pay attention to what he's doing, he is fucking Owen Wilson up.
Yeah, it's on the news.
Yeah, it's on, and it, like, deservedly so. Like, yes. He fucking brutalizes him.
Yeah. He puts the, like, the air conditioner, not the air conditioning, the hand warmer or hand dryer into his mouth. He's like, suck on it.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It's brutal.
And there are scenes where Like, it goes broad at times. Like, not in the way that, like, an Ace Ventura or certainly not, like, a Mask would go. But where it does seem at times where it's just a showcase for Carrey's physical comedy. Like, he buys a big karaoke system and has this big party filled with, he hires a prostitute to kind of frame Matthew Broderick and has a bunch of, like, old people and cable customers there. And there's, like, an extended scene where he's just singing, what is it, In Your Head or whatever, by Jefferson Airplane. Is that famous Jefferson
Somebody
Airplane
Somebody to
sign.
Love?
It was that. Yeah. It was Somebody to Love. And he's just... It's a lot of, like, rotating shots of him just being a goofball and stuff. Or the Medieval Times thing, where that's kind of a more cartoonish, like, oh, we're just having this silly fight, and this is some Carrey mugging time.
Yeah.
But then it's the more subtle stuff, or the parts where it's just, like, he's just beating the shit out of someone. Mm-hmm. Or he's manipulating Matthew Broderick's entire family into, like, loving him and thinking Matthew Broderick's the one who's, like, uptight and weird.
Yeah, that was bonkers when that happened, because it was, like, you felt, like, how helpless Matthew Broderick must feel there when his whole family is starting to turn against him and think that he's the one with the problem. And, you know, like, he can't, it's not like he can go to the police or ask for help, because Jim Carrey's, because the cable guy is, like, giving free cable to everyone and has everyone on his side.
Yeah.
So it's, like, he's just completely at his mercy.
Yeah, it's almost like this weird mob boss thing where he's got all these connections just through like giving out free cable. Like he visits Matthew Broderick when Broderick goes to prison because Carrey gives him all this, like, oh, it's a gift of all this, like, hi-fi stereo system and everything, and it's all stolen stuff. And Carrey shows up, and Matthew Broderick threatens him, and Carrey's like, oh, no, watch this. And he, like, you know, gives a little nod to the security guard or whatever, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, I know you. It's like, oh, he's got them all in his pocket just from giving free cable out.
Yeah. Actually, looking back on the movie, I'm wondering if, like, every over-the-top nice thing, nice in quotes, thing that the cable guy did for Steve, like, you know, set him up with a prostitute. Obviously, that wasn't a good thing, and Steve was really disappointed when he found out. But, like, I'm sure his intentions were not to fuck with him. I mean, he did take the picture of him. But I almost wonder if, like, everything he did was not to ruin his life, but more just to force him into being friends with him.
I feel like it could be both, though.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Giving him the gift or getting him to hook up with this girl, you could say, like, oh, yeah, you're going to like me more. But also, he knew the goods were stolen. And also, he knew it was a prostitute and took a picture for potential blackmail purposes, which all of that turns around. He goes to jail for the stolen stuff. He presents the picture. He gets him fired from his job by, like, you know, he plants cameras in his house and clips out these things of him making fun of his boss. Like, it's malicious, super planned out stuff.
It is. But it's all just because he so desperately wants to be close to him. Oh, you know what I was thinking, Dan? I have a question for you. We didn't talk about this, but the movie, obviously, it tries to portray this narrative of him being, you know, obsessed with the idea of being Matthew Broderick's friend, you know? Or maybe something even a little more nefarious than that. But it's never sexual, right?
No. I don't think there was any kind of undertones of, like, oh, this is, like, this sexual obsession thing.
Yeah.
I don't think they even, like, hinted at that, which
they
good.
Did, by and large, except there was this one scene where he calls him, like, in the middle of the night and puts him on fake hold and then hums that song, A Girl from Ipanema. And then, like, towards the end of the humming, he, like, makes this orgasm sound. And it didn't show – it was when he was, like, had the spider crawl over his face. So it didn't show his whole body. And I was almost wondering, like, are they making it – is he supposed to be jerking off there or something? But they probably would have played that up a little more if that was the case, right?
Yeah, I don't think they would have done one subtle thing. Because, like, when this movie wants to go obvious, it did go obvious. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they did, which – I think that would have kind of cheapened this whole thing, like, because the whole character is just that, like, he's never had a close human connection and he just wants a friend.
See, I don't think it would cheapen it necessarily. I think it would just add another layer to the mania.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think they really veer into that. They don't really, like, sexualize the character at all. Oh, God, there's the scene that I fucking, like, this is the moment that I realized that this movie aged really well, is when I caught myself just cracking up during the basketball scene, when this is another one of those, like, broader scenes, like the Medieval Times thing, where it's like, okay, here's the silly scene where Jim Carrey shows up and Matthew Broderick and his friends are playing basketball at the gym, and he just is going way too hard during this game and takes it way too seriously. But the shot where he like launches off of Jack Black's back and dunks it, and the backboard shatters, and there's all these, like, slow-mo shots of just, like, glass raining over him, and Carrie's just, like, screaming in slow-mo. There are so many moments during this that I thought, like, one of the great things about Jim Carrey is he never half-asses anything. Mm-hmm. Even like with weaker material or whatever, he is always just going as hard as mm-hmm. he possibly can, to the point where it's uncomfortable sometimes. Like, we watched that Jim and Andy documentary about him trying to emulate Andy Kaufman with Jerry Lawler on the set of Man on the Moon. And it's just like, dude, you are missing the mark here completely. This is not at all, like, he did not get wrestling or what Andy did understand about wrestling and everything. Like, there are times he goes in the wrong direction with it. But, man, by him just leaning so hard into every scene, I think this made it... It made it really effective, but also just the general script and scenario of this movie, played straight, I think this movie works.
Yeah, it's like my ideal combination of funny, like genuinely funny and genuinely terrifying. And I've never had a movie that does both so well. And like, if you think about me and my personality, like, I'm very upbeat and goofy, but, you know, I enjoy like darker things.
Yeah, yeah.
This movie is like everything I've ever wanted. I'm so like just regretful that I haven't watched it earlier, but also I feel like now at this point in my life is when I would appreciate it the most. I just fucking love it. I'm so pleased that we watched it.
I did not expect you to be so into it. I was kind of worried that like I thought it would be interesting to mm-hmm. watch now, but I didn't know if it would hold up at all or if you would like it or anything. Mm-hmm. And the way, like, as soon as it was over, when the way you were talking about it, it was just like, holy shit, you loved it.
Yeah, the only things I would change about it was, like, I think it would be more effective if Carrie died at the end. Like, why even have his character, you know, live? It just doesn't – it would have been – I feel like it would have been appropriately dark, but also a good way to conclude the movie. I mean, rather than just have him become obsessed with the helicopter guy or whatever – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you were going. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other thing I would change is, like, there's a lot of music cues that I feel like are really obvious and kind of, you know, it's just kind of superfluous. Like, it forces an emotion when it's already there on screen and it's just overkill.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot darker, I feel like, if it was more silent. I wonder if maybe the music was there to tampen down the darkness.
But... I mean, this was pitched as a comedy, but like we were talking before, like this could be sold very effectively as a, I don't know if horror is the right word, but like thriller.
It's psychological thriller.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I would love to see this movie, like a cut of this movie without the music in it. I think that would be so cool.
I want this movie to be appreciated more mm-hmm. nowadays, because like there are movies like, you know, Last Action Hero I've talked about liking for a long time, and I think there is a certain amount of people that are like, hey, it's actually held up really well, you should watch it mm-hmm. again. I don't hear anyone talking about The Cable Guy anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a great thing about this podcast, being able to talk about these things that we wouldn't have watched normally.
Right.
But I also just kind of want to get word out to like, hey, check out The Cable Guy in 2019. Watch,
it's a fucking good movie. But like, I get the comparison to Last Action Hero. But when we watched Last Action Hero, I thought it was a fine movie. And I could definitely see why it was ahead of its time. But I don't think it was particularly well done. I don't think it was a great movie. This is a fantastic movie.
Here's the difference. I think Last Action Hero is a very clever concept mm-hmm. that has really good moments within the context of it. But overall, it's kind of a long movie, and it does kind of fall into just like standard action movie tropes and stuff.
Right.
And like this annoying kid and all this stuff. There are parts of Last Action Hero that just like, okay, whatever. It's a great concept.
Mm-hmm.
Cable Guy is a great concept. It's an original concept. And I think from beginning to end, it holds up. Like, there are parts where it's like the medieval time scene goes on a little long. And that's like, I don't know if they just needed like a purely physical, like Looney mm-hmm. Tunes fight or something like that. That's a little long. But man, I feel like I'd be stretching to find major complaints with this movie.
Right.
Like, it's just, it super duper holds up.
It does. It's great.
Trying to think if there's any other scenes or anything that we neglected to touch on here. I think we hit all the main ones. Like, even, like, the time capsule stuff of seeing the technology of the era and seeing the giant, like, CRT TV mm-hmm. and everything and just those giant gaudy speakers. And
You know what I want to mention is, like, I think it's probably the middle of the movie when things start getting really intense with the cable guy stalking Steven. And there's that moment where, like, he is going to meet his parents with Rachel, go to his parents' house, and he opens the door, and he's, like, you know, reluctant to spend time with his parents, so he's kind of dreading it, and he opens the door, and fucking Cable Guy is there, and just seeing his eyes, it's like, fuck, this guy is everywhere.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
There's the scene where he gets back to his place, or his parents' place, or something, and it's, like, a torrential downpour, mm-hmm. and, like, Carrie just, like, steps out from behind a bush,
waiting.
And he's clearly just been standing in the rain with no umbrella or anything, just waiting for him.
Yeah.
So many scenes like that are just great. the answering, like, I feel like the first sign that something is seriously amiss with him is when he's going through the answering machine.
For sure.
And he's like, oh, it's in the shower. Sorry, I thought I might have missed your call. And it's like, man, this guy, there's something going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something's off.
Oh, I think we are 100% in the same boat with this one.
Absolutely.
Like, I think it is, I would have to look at the whole filmography, but I'm trying to think of a Carrie movie that I can, like, more wholeheartedly recommend in 2019.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I recently watched Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind.
That's a great one.
Which obviously holds up because it's not really anchored to any technology or anything. And it's a really good movie, but this is a extremely good movie.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of a Carrie movie that I could recommend more. I kind of want to look back. I haven't seen Liar Liar or The Mask in a long time. Mm-hmm. I have no expectations that either of those would hold up anywhere. Like, those were never high concept things, you know. We watched Dumb and Dumber 2. That's the real, I can't think of a lower point in Carrie's career, even for everyone that, you know, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Wasn't that whole movie just a money laundering operation or something?
There was some weird stuff going on with that. I don't remember what the deal is, but it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Terrible.
And it's like, makes you sad to see Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey participating in it.
Yeah, it is sad.
That's probably the low point. And I really, really think after watching it again, The Cable Guy might be like right there at the high point. Also, Truman Show holds up really well. I think those two are really high points in Carrie's career. But I couldn't be happier that we watched this.
Oh my gosh. Seriously, it's like, it's going to rank among my favorite films now.
Just period?
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen a movie that's like hit me so hard in both ways. If anyone else has a recommendation for like an effective black comedy that's like actually funny, please send them our way, because I'd love to indulge in that.
We were laughing out loud through like huge parts of it, and then there were parts where it's like, holy shit, this is just kind of a fascinating story.
Yeah. Like I said, that turning point when like you realize how bonkers he is, like I feel like for the remainder of the movie, my eyes were just way open and my heart was just pounding and I was super scared.
Yeah. Man. And a cool ending too. I do. Like, I get what you're saying about like it would have made sense for him to die. In fact, in my head, I thought I remembered him dying. I thought he was going to get like impaled on the satellite
dish.
That's
what it makes it look like.
But yeah, I thought that was the case. But that's kind of a nice little thing at the end of like, you know, the helicopter guy calls him. Hey, you're going to be okay, buddy. He's like, I'm your buddy? Really? Like, that fits with the character and everything.
Yeah, so it's not a completely happy ending. That would have been really lame. I mean, you know, the cycle's just going to continue. But I think it would have been better if he like committed suicide or something.
Yeah.
Especially impaling himself on the satellite dish that was, like, responsible for his entire upbringing.
Yeah, during this time of the verdict of this giant trial.
Oh, which, yeah.
They only cut to that trial a few times during the movie, but every time I feel it's pretty funny.
It's
like,
so
the
funny
Eric Roberts, like, TV movie where he
the
plays.
The made-for-TV movie, yeah.
Man, Cable Guy's fucking good.
It's a great movie.
It's really, really good.
Well done, Ben Stiller.
Yeah, Stiller, Carrie, Broderick, everyone involved in this movie. It's just a killer movie.
For sure.
Yeah, so that'll be it. What a fun surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be it for this week, and we will do the thing we do where we thank everyone who has supported this podcast.
Each and every one of you.
Yes, the podcast.
But especially.
Oh, wait. We've got. Well, let me tell the folks what the support is, and then you'll give your special thanks
to
someone.
All right, do it to it.
So, listener support, if this is your first time, if you're a huge Cable Guy fan and that's what brought you to this podcast, there's a thing called listener support that Anchor puts on. And that's the thing where if you go to pantingthestream.com, you click support this podcast, you can support at $1. $5 or $10 a month, or you can just do it once and cancel. And honestly, any one of those levels, most of our supporters, you know, we've got a very modest amount of supporters. Most of them are at the $1 a month thing. We're talking $12 a year. That's like a sandwich a year. Helps us out a ton. It's really cool to see anyone who listens to this podcast supports it. Huge thanks to you.
Indeed.
And Bonk, as you alluded to, every time we get a new supporter, we try to make sure we give them a special shout out and thanks.
Put the spotlight on them for a change.
Yes, with a Bonku just Indeed. For them. Who do we have this week, Bonk?
So Daniel, the whole year I will be reciting Bonkus for one Lance.
Don't make promises you can't keep. Lance, this is your moment.
Yeah, sorry Lance, this is going to be it. Unless you decide to support us again in the future or continue to support us.
Yes.
So here we go, Lance. I was in a trance when, by chance, there was Lance in his trademark stance.
I can't wait till we've done this long enough and you're just like a genuinely like, oh yeah, she's one of the great haiku writers of North America.
Really honed my haiku skills and panning the stream.
They're very good. Yes. And thank you, Bonk, for that beautiful Bonku, and thank you to Lance for
Lance,
your support.
I hope you don't mind. Your name rhymes with a lot. I couldn't really move past that.
It worked.
It was hung up on it. So.
Yeah, you got to take it where you got it. So, Lance, thank you, and thank you to anyone who listens to or supports this podcast. If you got suggestions, recommendations, feedback, any of that stuff, you can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. You can follow us at panthestream on Twitter, which is where I try to get on there and announce. Once we've recorded the podcast and everything, I like to announce what the...
Lock it in?
Yeah. Be like, hey, we're going to be watching this, so if you want to watch along with us, you can watch this before Sunday's podcast. That is at panthestream on Twitter. And as always, thank you to Tom Mata.
Wait a minute. Before we sign off, do you want to recommend anything
Holy
to the fine people?
Holy moly. I skipped right past the suggestions. Yes. Bonk, do you have any suggestions for the fine folks at home?
Sure. I sure do. My suggestion this week is a TV show on Hulu, which are they still called TV shows if they're on
Hulu? I think so, yes.
If it's not a movie, it's a TV show? Is it just a show? Whatever.
People know.
We should know. We're the ones
that we have a podcast with like fucking 60 episodes about it.
We're like the source for this information.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know anything. So the name of the show is The Act, and it tells the story of Gypsy Rose Blanchard and her mother Dee Dee, and it's about Munchausen by proxy. It's about murder. It's about sex.
Is this Patricia Arquette?
Yes.
Okay.
The great Patricia Arquette does an amazing job in this movie. She transforms herself completely. I mean, she's one of the most beautiful women in the world, and you would never know it. It's like a monster-esque transformation.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, it's an awesome movie. The story, it's based on real story, so true events. It's pretty bonkers. I highly recommend checking it out. The Act on Hulu.
The Act on Hulu. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I got a suggestion, and you know what? We have this platform where we are able to talk into microphones and introduce people to little-known things and kind of boost these things that people wouldn't hear about otherwise. So I want to boost a little book I just read that you may not have heard of. It's called The Great Gatsby.
The Great what?
It's called, there's a fella named Jay Gatsby.
Okay.
And he's a rich man, and I don't want to spoil too much about this under-the-radar book.
Well, it only just came out, so
it did just come out. I haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure it just came out. He's in love with a lady from his past, and he wants to impress her, and so he gets rich. And I don't want to say anything else, because it takes some twists and turns.
Well, so you told me that it's one of the best books you've ever read.
Yeah, and joking aside, like, obviously, I know Gatsby's history, and you know, it's like one of the contenders for the great American novel and all that. I think I was supposed to read it in high school, and I think I read, like, a one-paragraph summary on Sparks Notes and guessed the answers well enough. But I'm glad I read the entire book, because it was really, really, really great. I've been voraciously reading in 2019.
And he has been constantly reading.
That's what I do. And I get home and I just read like all night. And it is the best I've read. I think I read like 12 books this year. And Gatsby is my favorite.
It's one of those books, like a lot of like the American classics, that would probably benefit more from being introduced to people when they're adults and don't have to deal with the pressure of like writing an essay about it. Because I feel like, you know, so much of that is just, it just makes you reluctant to read it, you know?
When it feels like literal homework. It's like, oh, they're telling me to read this. It's going to be boring. You know. But no, it's I think it's in that class of like Animal Farm and Tom Sawyer and like these books that like everyone was supposed to read.
I think it is too. I feel like those are the major books that people read in high school. And
yeah, it's on so many curriculums and everything. But as a 34-year-old who just read it for the first time, I got to say it was just tremendous. Might be the best book I've ever read.
That's awesome.
I just loved it.
I'll have to go back and read that one day. I did read it in high school, but it's been a while.
I read it on Kindle, and I liked it so much that I bought a hard copy right afterwards. We got a hard copy here if you want to read it. It's a quick read, but yes, The Great Gatsby, unknown book if you want to read that. So now we can get out of here by thanking Tom Mata.
Can I just real quick?
Yes.
Tom Mata, that's my brother. He does the theme song for Panning the Stream. And he's also the guitar player and I guess the primary songwriter for Thank You Scientist, where he plays guitar, plays iru, plays sitar, plays all manner of string instruments. But guitar is mainly his jam. Their new record, Terraformer, comes out June 14th, 2019.
We got a release date.
Into progressive rock, weird, wacky avant-garde stuff that just is unbelievably like high-caliber musicianship. Check it out, please.
I gotta say, I've never been one to listen to prog rock, or I'm certainly not a musician. I don't understand all the intricacies that go into making music. But even as a very much a layman, you and I went to their concert in Jersey last weekend, and I was in awe watching Tommy and everyone in the band. Like, everyone in the band is just seems to be like top of their game. Just tremendously talented.
Everyone there pulls their weight. They're all incredible. And just being in that, like, a legitimate concert hall with, like, tons of Thank You Scientist fans. Like, everyone just wants to hear their new shit.
And
fucking delivered.
And we met a couple of Pain in the Stream fans over there. I think Ariel, we met Ariel, and he tweeted at us. So if you happen to be listening, it was good to meet you there.
Yeah, I hope you like the show.
Yeah, it was a killer show. So really, thanks to Tom. Best of luck with the album and, you know, any kind of tour that comes out of that and everything.
Well,
Tom
Munda.
Then you should go see Thank You Scientist on tour right now. And right now, the music should be playing, which means we gotta go.
We gotta go.
But hey, check out The Cable Guy on Hulu.
Do it.
Really super strong recommendation here. It's excellent now.
Excellent.
So thank you all. And Bonk, thank you most
Daniel,
for joining me each and every week here on Painting the Stream. And we will see you next week.
Bye.